Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
I'm Ruthie Goodbow, and welcome to our February 2020 edition of Third Thursdays. On these Third Thursday podcasts, we discuss emerging labor issues and hopefully provide practical advice into labor relations. If you don't know me or you're new to our podcast, I'm a shareholder with Ogletree Deacons in our Pittsburgh and Detroit metro offices and co-chair of the firm's traditional labor practice. If you joined me last month for our crossover edition of Third Thursdays, we talked about the intersection of technology and labor law with my colleague, Jen Betts. If you missed that podcast, it's a great overview and also a great introduction to another podcast I co-host with Jen, TechToon Workplace. Sorry for the shameless pitch, but if you want to listen to it, just go to our Ogletree website and you'll be able to find it. Today, we're going to talk a little more about the interplay between technology and labor, specifically about employee social media platforms and how they're used within an organization. There's been a lot of discussions, blogs, suggestions, recommendations regarding the use of these social media platforms in the workplace, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, all kinds of platforms. The idea is to get employees connected to each other and the company and provide a space for communication. Employers are using these platforms to help build morale and the employee community. Many studies have found also that transparency is a big issue for employees right now. And often these types of platforms, if they're used appropriately, will allow the employer to demonstrate their transparency, their willingness to be transparent with their employees. SHRM recently had a great post in their HR Daily newsletter succinctly outlining the pros and cons of social media in the workplace. Some of the pros that SHRM listed in that posting included recruiting, marketing the brand, internal communications, employee engagement, social learning, and knowledge sharing. That's one I hadn't thought about too much. And networking, both internally and externally. And as SHRM aptly notes, there are also drawbacks with the use of these social media platforms. And those can include things like security issues, potential harassment, negative exposure, legal violations, loss of productivity, and even wage and hour issues. For our discussion today, let's first focus on the pros, the advantages relating to employee engagement, knowledge sharing, and networking. I think we'd all agree the more our employees connect with each other and the organization, the stronger the relationship can be, the stronger relationship between the organization and the employees. And that's really a very positive outcome. In an atmosphere of open communications, employers can have greater opportunities to know and understand the expectations of their workforce and to be able to respond to issues. And this demonstrates to employees their value, the importance of their voice, and the organization's overall concern for their team. As with most things related to employee engagement, the devil is in the details. From a labor perspective, how do we balance the benefit of free, open, and frank communication with some of those potential legal implications of trying to monitor and in some situations even control what's happening on these platforms? Recently, advice memorandums from the Office of the General Counsel of the NLRB have been released, and they've addressed some of those issues and give us some insight on how to deal with some of those potential negatives that come with providing a forum for employee communication, such as these internal social media platforms. And just a quick reminder, these advice memorandums that come out of the Office of the General Counsel, these are situations where the regional directors are looking at cases and they speak to the general counsel's office. They ask for their advice as to whether or not there is in fact a violation. And then the general counsel issues an internal opinion and direction to those regional directors. Now, from time to time, those advice memorandums are released to the public, but oftentimes there is a lag between the time the advice memorandum is issued in a particular case and when that is released to the public. So we have to always, when we read these things, they're very instructive, they're helpful in understanding, giving us some insight into the thinkings of the GC and how regional directors come to make the decisions they make. But we always have to look at them in the context of the timing. For example, there was an advice memorandum that is dated July 3rd, 2018. It's in the case 06CA209251, and that was just recently released. In that case, the region submitted the matter for advice as to whether certain provisions of the employer social media policy had violated the act. And the general counsel's office concluded that provisions of the policy which prohibited employees from posting, in quotes, I'm using the air quotes, inaccurate or false information about the employer and requiring employees to keep confidential employer policies and procedures violated the National Labor Relations Act. Now, in that advice memorandum, the GC used the Boeing standard and concluded that a statement in the policy, it was just a simple statement that said, be respectful. In that advice memorandum, the GC said that statement, be respectful, was lawful as a Category 1 rule. Now, just remembering flashback to an earlier podcast, under the Boeing standard, a Category 1 rule is designated as lawful on its face because on its face, the rule does not prohibit or interfere with Section 7 rights. And in those cases, no balancing of rights or justification is required. Or it can also be a, quote, Category 1 rule, even if the rule has a reasonable tendency to interfere with Section 7 rights, but the potential adverse impact is outweighed by the employer justification. So that statement, be respectful, under Boeing, Category 1, lawful. On the other hand, there was a provision that directed employees to, quote, be honest and accurate. And in the GC's eyes, that went too far. Here, the GC said, that was a Category 2 rule under Boeing. And a Category 2 rule is a rule that warrants individualized scrutiny because it prohibits or interferes with Section 7 rights. And so it has to be balanced against the employer's justifications. And in this case, the general counsel said that the adverse impact on protected conduct was not outweighed by the employer's justification. So that language, and I'm doing the air quotes, I always do this, be honest and accurate, was unlawful. Why was it unlawful, or why was it determined to be unlawful? In determining the language under the be honest and accurate section went too far. The GC noted that although employees may prohibit maliciously false statements, they cannot prohibit or punish the publication of just inaccurate or simply false statements. And they refer to board and court precedent that have long recognized that employees get a lot of leeway in making statements in the context of Section 7 activity, including the leeway to make inaccurate statements, as long as those inaccuracies don't rise to either intentional inaccuracies or malicious defamation. That's because the congressional intent of the NLRA is to encourage free debate on issues between labor and management. And so to require complete accuracy in that speech, in that space, would place just too high of a burden on employees in the exercise of those rights. So the language, because it was just very simply stated, be honest and accurate, the general counsel felt that was unlawful because if somebody unintentionally made an inaccurate statement, that would curtail their exercise of their Section 7 rights. Another GC advice memorandum that was issued on September 5th, 2008, which was also recently made public, is similarly instructive in this area. There were several provisions of that employer's social media policies that were challenged and therefore analyzed under the Boeing standard. I'm not going to go through all of the language that was at issue in that case, but want to highlight a couple of points. In that case, or in that policy, there was a heading on the rule, and the heading was "Distinguish Personal Social Media and Work Social Media." The following paragraph went on to state that employees who mention or discuss their work, the company, colleagues, products, services, must identify themselves by their real name and relevant title or role in the social media. It also stated that in making posts, employees must make clear they're not speaking on behalf of the employer. While the requirement that employees make clear they are expressing their own views and are not representing the company, that passed muster. We all know that. That's an easy one. The general counsel found that the requirement that employees identify themselves by their real names whenever discussing work was a Category 2 rule, and on balance, the employer's justification did not outweigh the burden on the exercise of Section 7 rights. So let's remember back Category 2. Facially, it was unlawful because it clearly interfered with Section 7 rights. And then even after further analysis, the GC found that there wasn't a justification that made that rule acceptable. And I think we can all guess why. The board has also long recognized that requiring employees to self-identify in order to participate in collective action would be just too high a price to pay, too much of a burden on that employee's Section 7 rights. And if we think about it, I can't even imagine how we would think that could be acceptable, in the sense that we certainly wouldn't say that an employee that was attempting to organize their workforce would have to come out and identify that they were the person behind it, or if they were complaining about the company or supervisor or term and condition of employment, that they would have to kind of publicly announce, "I'm the complainer," because of course the employee would be concerned about retribution from their boss, their company. Now, the language of this particular requirement, the requirement to self-identify, which the GC said was unlawful, was directed at personal social media and not necessarily at internal social media platforms within a company. And while I can see there may be a different standard for internal use of social media, depending on what the defined purpose of that platform is, requiring employees to use their real names, regardless of whether that rule is lawful or unlawful under the National Labor Relations Act, would certainly curtail frank discussion. And I'm thinking about there may be some situations where you may want to require individuals to use their real names. So, for example, if the purpose of the internal platform is information or knowledge sharing, it might be important that if somebody asks a question, then somebody answers it and gives information, that I understand, well, that's coming from an operation perspective, or that's coming from a quality assurance perspective, or that's a person who really should know the answer, and that's a person that maybe should not know the answer or doesn't know the answer. Now, I'm not going to go through everything that was in that general counsel advice memorandum or in that particular policy, but I do want to bring to your attention another provision the general counsel found was lawful. And it's a little long, but I think it's really helpful if I read it fully. I think it gives us some really good insight into what the general counsel is thinking and what we should be thinking about when we're putting together our social media policies. So bear with me here. The policy stated, Social media is not the appropriate venue for voicing complaints about the company or particular colleagues that could be resolved more constructively through the appropriate channels consistent with the company's commitment to maintain a diverse and safe workplace. If company colleagues wish to use social media to voice complaints or criticisms, they must avoid posting anything that is or could be viewed as discriminatory, harassing, threatening, defamatory, or invasive of another individual's privacy. Such prohibited posts may include disparaging customers, falsely and intentionally harming someone's reputation, bullying coworkers, or otherwise creating a hostile work environment. Threats of violence, discrimination, and harassment will not be tolerated. Wow, that's a mouthful, but I think that covers what we probably all are thinking and hoping would be the parameters of the use of social media, especially internally in an internal platform. So the GC concluded this rule was lawful, and the analysis was in the Category 2 rule. So on its face, you could see that this rule interfered or could interfere with employees' Section 7 rights because concerted criticism of a company's employment practices or policies is central to the rights granted by the NLRA. So a restriction against voicing those concerns without any additional context would likely cause employees to refrain from protected concerted activity. That's what I was talking about before. I'm afraid of retribution. But here, the rule focuses on the employer's commitment to maintaining a safe and diverse workplace, and it advises, keyword, employees that if they have complaints, going through the official company channels is more constructive than simply complaining on social media. The language also makes clear that employees are allowed to complain. They are allowed to criticize on social media, but it should be done civilly. And as mentioned earlier, the last sentence, or the sentence relating to the false information, in this policy, it's very clear that the prohibition or the restriction is against knowingly or intentionally making false statements. And that's different than just the be honest statement in the other case. There's a lot more in both of those memos, and frankly, both are very interesting reads. But I'd like to shift gears just a bit from the policies themselves and talk about how they may be implemented, how you may implement those policies around the use of social media, and discuss the content of what's being said on those platforms. And just to make sure my point is made, it's important to understand that both of the memos I just discussed dealt with the lawfulness of the policies themselves, not the application of the policies to specific conduct. And I know I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but it's the consistency of the application that often draws unfair labor practice charges. Let's take, for example, the last provision in the second case I mentioned. That long paragraph talking about the most constructive way to criticize or complain and the prohibitions against discrimination, threats, bullying, etc. When using an internal social media platform, I think those types of guardrails are even more imperative than when we're talking about personal social media use. However, these types of guardrails are also going to be very challenging to consistently and fairly applying, especially if one of the purposes of your internal social media is to elicit frank and open conversation. If the purpose is to create self-review, create a dialogue where issues can be raised and then hopefully addressed in a constructive way. Illustrative of that point is another GC memorandum. You see the theme today is GC memorandums. just published this last Friday in a case 32 CA 164766, and this was actually issued. This memo was issued in 2016, but just now released. And so going back, remember, the analysis was pre-Boeing, a different board, but it's still very interesting and important, I think, to read and take a look at how the GC at that time was thinking. It sets out a set of facts, a fact scenario that warrants some discussion. What happens when views expressed by employees are not popular, are not mainstream? And then what happens when other employees respond back to those unpopular or out of the mainstream views? In that case, comments were made about diversity and social justice programs with which the employee didn't agree. And in expressing his opinions, he arguably engaged in protected concerted activity. When he did that, he drew the ire of coworkers and even management. In the end, he even received discipline for some of the comments that he made. Now, again, remember 2016, 2018, 2020, so the parameters may have changed, but I think it's worth reading and looking at, because suffice it to say that in adopting parameters for the use of employee engagement social media platforms, we have to be mindful that we are going to hear, we are going to see things that we don't like, things that make us uncomfortable. And while we can enforce a civility policy, as mentioned in the previous case, it cannot be used to silence some points of views and not others. That would be discriminatory. That would be inconsistent. This is not an easy task. And the board even acknowledges the difficulty in determining when PCA goes too far and loses the protection of the act. As we know, in September of last year, the National Labor Relations Board invited briefs regarding whether it should reconsider its standards for profane outbursts and offensive statements, especially those of a racially or sexually charged nature. The board has asked for public input on whether to modify, overrule, adhere to the standards applied in those kinds of cases where profane or racially offensive language is judged not to have lost the protection of the National Labor Relations Act. So they're looking at this issue too. So if you're going to use internal social media platforms, and if you're going to, and I think you need to, place guardrail rules around the use of those platforms, make sure there is plenty of forethought given, not only to what platform, what technology is going to be used, but what we want to accomplish with that platform. What do we want to happen? What do we want to use it for? And then we need to make sure we give a lot of thought to the policies that surround that use. And then most importantly, let's make sure that everyone understands both the expectations and the rules around the platforms. So as always, we've got to train, 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 and communicate, communicate, communicate. And that's important both for employees, coworkers, but also management. So we are not having knee-jerk reactions when we see things or hear things on those platforms that make us feel uncomfortable. Well, looks like I've used up all of my time for today. I'd be curious to know whether and how your organization is using social media internally, what issues you've faced, and what guardrails you've put into place relating to the use of those social media platforms. So everyone, have a great week. Enjoy the rest of the month until we meet again next time. And as you know, my motto, be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid.
The Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.